Just to fill me with confidence, right before the song, one of my sons leaned over and said, "Dad, blessedly assure me that this won't take too long." So, what some of you may not realise is that my kids get to see this like 26,000 times when we're over here, and so that's kind of, it's old hat to them by the time we get through this, but probably you're blessedly assured you'll have to hear it once. Hey, thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. Had a meeting with the missionary committee just before here. What I told them in words, I will be showing you tonight in pictures. And so I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to do that tonight. Let me see if I've got this turned on. Hold on. Let me see if that changes. Aha, it does. I was expecting to see lights. What I want to do is to imitate a little bit like what Paul the Apostle would do. He would go from place to place with the gospel. He'd go from town to town, plant congregations, reach souls, and then he would return to his hometown of Antioch, or sometimes to Jerusalem, and he would share with the brethren what God had been able to do through him and his co-workers with the gospel in these places. And so I want to tonight is to share with you some of the things that God has been able to do through myself and my family and the other members in Palmerston North in the work of the Lord in New Zealand. Here is a map that will show you if you're unfamiliar with where New Zealand is located. And so you will see here, this is New Zealand. We are around about 1,100 miles east of Australia. If you were to hop on a plane from here and fly to LA, that's around about 13 or 14 hours on the plane. So you wouldn't want to swim it, but it's long enough flying it. I'm really thankful for the movies and the entertainment that they have there. The capital city is Wellington, which is right at the bottom of the North Island. So this is the North Island, this is the South Island, boring names, but we're kind of stuck with them. Palmerston North is right here, about a quarter of the way up the North Island. New Zealand has a population of just under 5 million, and Palmerston North has a population of around about 86,000. In the bottom corner there, you will see the New Zealand coat of arms, and you'll see the lady and the Māori chief shows you that New Zealand is quite a multicultural country, European and native Māori. The crown shows you that New Zealand is part of the British Commonwealth, and the sheep that you see there and the wheat would show you that farming and agriculture is a very big part of New Zealand's earning and lifestyle. The ships would show you that the shipping industry, the fishing industry, ocean-going vessels is something that is important to New Zealand as well, of course, being an island nation. New Zealand is a very pretty country. We have a lot of very picturesque locations, and a lot of people will travel to New Zealand, a lot of tourists come our way, and so tourism is another one of our big earners. Some people call New Zealand God Zone. They believe that God paid a little bit of extra attention when he was creating our country, and maybe to some degree that is correct. This is what our money looks like. A bit more colourful than your boring old green stuff. And so you'll see some of our more famous characters. And so on the $5 note at the top there is Sir Edmund Hillary. He was the man who first climbed the world's tallest mountain, Mount Everest. Below him is a lady called Kate Shepherd. And she was a lady who did a lot of work to achieve New Zealand being the first country to allow women to vote. And then we have the Queen, again showing that we are part of the British Commonwealth. On the $50 note, we have Sir Api, his name is a bit of a mouthful, Apirana Nata. and he was a very prominent Māori politician, and he was very concerned about protecting Māori customs and rights in the country. And then Lord Rutherford is on the $100 bill. He was involved in the research that split the atom. Maybe if he had known that it was going to create atom bombs, he may have thought twice, but you know, there we have it. And then, of course, you've got our several of our native birds on the other side of the dollar notes and our coinage. New Zealand has several iconic foods. In the top corner, you have what we call Hokey Pokey ice cream. Of course, it's not the dance. It's a little wee small kind of caramelised toffees. And a lot of people make that their first port of eating when they come to New Zealand. Beside that is roast lamb. Roast lamb is something that we eat a lot in New Zealand, and we really enjoy it. Manuka honey is a honey that is from the native Manuka tree, and it is a very healthful honey. A lot of people have it for curing various things. My older brother Todd is a beekeeper, and he likes to tell people that it's the only biblical breakfast spread. And so hopefully before you came to church this morning, you had your honey on your toast to get ready to worship. Marmite is another breakfast, well, I guess it's not just a breakfast spread, but it's a spread that looks like chocolate, but don't be fooled. It's kind of a savoury yeast kind of spread. We kind of grow up on it, so we like it, but you can get a bit of a shock for the first time if you're not used to it. The drink there is called Allen P. We call it a fizzy drink. You would call it a soda, but it is a kind of a lemon soda. Its slogan is world famous in New Zealand. I'm not sure if you've heard of it over here, but it's world famous in New Zealand. The little in the middle there is a bowl of a little fish called whitebait. It's a small, transparent, tasteless kind of fish, but people really consider it a delicacy, and they'll spend weeks just trying to get half a bucket load, but and they'll make it into a fritter, but that's a New Zealand delicacy. Excuse me. Your allergies are really, your pollen is really giving me some allergies. In the bottom corner there is a dessert called a pavlova. It's a very light, fluffy meringue. Don't let the Australians tell you that they invented it. It was invented in New Zealand, but it's a popular dessert. And then, of course, you've got the kiwi fruit there. Originally, it was called the Chinese gooseberry, but it grows so well in New Zealand that they nicknamed it kiwi fruit. This is Palmerston North. Again, Palmerston North. It's quite a beautiful town, and it's a combination of a city, but it's also got a very rural flavour to it. And so we've got a lot of farmland around us, and a lot of our university kind of focuses on agriculture and farming as a trade. This is our meeting place, and so you'll see here is our main auditorium, of course, where we meet for our worship gatherings, Bible classes and that kind of thing. And then in the back, you can just see a portion of it. We call it the house, but it's just a house or a building where we have our Bible classes for the kids. There's an office, there's an area where we'll have lunches, a kitchen, and that kind of deal. This is inside our auditorium here, and so that would kind of be maybe half of this row would be what you're seeing there. And this is just inside the house. By the way, this is a little podium that Ethan made for me a few months ago as a birthday present or something, so he made me a podium, which I'm pretty proud of. And so this is inside our church building. Now, for the rest of the presentation, I want to sort of cut it into the two segments based upon Matthew 28. Excuse me. The first part of this deals with going into all the world, making disciples. And so the first part of this is going to deal with our outreach, with getting into the community. And then the second part of the passage talks about teaching them to observe all I command you. And so dealing with the... thank you. Appreciate that. Watch me choke on it. right. The second part's going to deal with our inreach. And so the teaching and the encouragement of the brethren. And so I want to start with some of the evangelistic approaches that we use in New Zealand. And so aside from our, I guess, day-to-day opportunities, making use of times of speaking to people on a on an everyday basis, kind of friendship evangelism, there are other areas that we can utilize as well. One of which is letterboxing. You might call it mailboxing, I guess. This is where we go from house to house, putting pamphlets or tracts or information sheets or invites into people's mailboxes, which is perfectly legal in New Zealand. We can do it as often as we like, with pretty much what we like. And so this is an effective way of covering a wide amount of area in a short amount of time. And that's one of the things on the screen is one of the pamphlets that we leave behind, just offering some of the free Bible study opportunities that we have available. Door knocking is something that we do on a fairly regular basis. I know a lot of people think, oh, door knocking, and they don't like it, they don't think it works, they're very hesitant about it. I am very pro door knocking. For one thing, I probably wouldn't be standing before you today if someone hadn't knocked on the door of my grandparents' home. And so I'm very pro door knocking for that reason. I'm also pro door knocking because I think it's a biblical approach. There's a passage on the screen there that would show that they went from house to house, preaching the gospel, trying to encourage people to repent. And so if the apostles in the early church went from house to house, well, that's a good model or a good pattern for us to want to imitate as well. And I'll touch on campaigns in a minute. You will have a lot of crazy experiences when you go door knocking. You meet all sorts of people. Sometimes you'll see signs like this on the door. And so these people wanted $20 per minute to listen to sales pitches or religious discussions. We knocked on the door anyway. Sadly, no one came to the door. I wasn't quite sure how I was going to approach it if they did come to the door. I figure for $20 I could probably get a fair bit out in a minute as far as inviting someone to have a Bible study. I'm not quite sure whether we'd be able to afford that each door. But anyway, you have some fun experiences when you go out and door knocking. Another area of outreach is, of course, benevolence. We try to help out where we can, show people that we're concerned about them, we care about their needs. And so there's a variety of different things that we do. We'll make meals, we'll help out young mothers, we'll offer limited financial assistance where we're able to do that. We baked cookies for one of the local rest homes. We made blankets for the infant wards at the hospital. And one thing you'll notice there is that a lot of our youth were involved in doing that. I really encourage congregations to get the youth involved in your programs. And if we get them involved when they're young, they're going to be more likely to be active as they get older, and they can see that working for the church is something that's appealing. In the bottom corner there, you'll see some boxes. The ladies call these sunshine boxes or sunshine bags, and they'll get little things like tissues and soaps and hand creams and that kind of thing. They're all in yellow packages, and they'll put them in a box. There'll be some Bible books and little cards of that nature too. And they'll give it to a lady or someone who's going through a hard time or a sad time or just needs a bit of a pick-me-up. And this is just a little encouragement for them. Okay, our campaigns. In a campaign, we will go from, generally it's about 2 weeks. And for every day of those 2 weeks, other than maybe Sunday, we're out knocking on doors. And so it's a major part of our outreach, our major focus of our outreach. And so we'll have individuals come from Fried Hardman every second year. They'll send a group of students over. And then every other year, we'll have what we call a kind of a New Zealand campaign, is where we'll invite brethren from all over New Zealand and other places to come and help us out doing the same thing. And so we talked about this a little bit in our mission committee meeting. We would love for you to be involved in a campaign. We would love for you to be part of a group that comes over and helps out. And so I am convinced that maybe other than your own personal Bible study, there is no better way to grow as a Christian than to go and knock on a door. You are forced to think on your feet, you are talking to people, you're sharing your faith, you're trying to encourage someone to have a Bible study with you. You will grow. You meet all different kinds of people, you are challenged with questions, and so it's a real good growing experience. And so we would love for you, if you have an opportunity to come over and help, we will train you, we will encourage you, we will house you, we might just feed you if you do a good job. And so if you come over, we will take care of you. And it'll be a good experience for you. You'll help us, but you'll be built up and encouraged yourself. And so mark your calendar, 2021. The last week of February, first week of March will be our next major campaign. And so get with Tom, and he will maybe give you some more information as I give him information about that. Whatever evangelistic approaches that you use, your goal ought to be to get people into the gospel. As this and other passages will teach us, the power of salvation is in the scriptures. It's not in me, it's not in you. You don't have to have all the answers. You just have to direct people towards the Bible because that has the spiritual answers. And so whatever evangelistic approach that you do in your discussions with your friends, your family, engineer the discussion towards developing their interest and looking at what the gospel teaches and having a Bible study with these individuals, because that's where they're going to learn the message of salvation and what to do to be saved. I encourage you to use a Bible study tool. We tend to, in our personal discussions, sort of go here, there, and everywhere, but if you have something that kind of keeps you on track and is kind of a systematic tool of conveying the gospel, I think that's a wise move. I've put together a tool called the Seed for Truth Seekers. I've looked at other tools, stolen all the good bits, and then added some of my own ideas and put this tool together. And it works well for me. And so the first one deals with what our spiritual authority is. It shows why we need to be believing and obeying Jesus. It talks about the oneness of the church. The next two studies show how we can identify the one church of the Bible by looking at worship, leadership, the names that we can wear as God's people, and then looking at the important factor of what did the church of the Bible teach and practice by way of the plan of salvation. And we can identify the church by looking at these areas. There are other areas, but these seem to be four main ones that we can readily identify the church. The last one is what we call a counting the cost study. And so when someone signals an interest to want to become a Christian, we don't just quickly rush them and dunk them in the baptistry. We want to go through and make sure that they understand the lifelong commitment that they are making, that they understand that Christianity is not just a bed of roses all the time. There may be challenges, there may be temptations, well, there will be temptations, there will be persecutions, there's going to be hardships, there's going to be things that are not always easy. People need to be aware of that before they make that commitment. And we'll kind of do a review over the things that we have already studied. So people are well aware of the most important decision that they're going to make, what's involved with that. Like I said, I developed this for my work, but if any of you think that might be something you would want to consider using, get with me, give me your name, give me your email, and I can send you a copy of these Bible studies that you can, if you want to, utilize in your own work. And it's good learning too, for your own personal spiritual education. I talked about a little bit of this in the mission meeting that we had, but one of a unique Bible study experience I've had in recent years is we've had some Asian contacts come our way. Well, I was trying to study with these individuals, and you know, the English was pretty poor, and so it was quite challenging. And so I was able to employ the services of a man by the name of John Grubb, who speaks fluent Mandarin. And so he was in in this picture, he was in a different city of New Zealand studying with us. But since then, he's been in America, and he's been on Facebook video, and I've been studying with this man and others in New Zealand. I've been going through the English part of the study. He's been translating it into Mandarin. And it's been a really exciting way of using technology and being able to study with someone or with someone on the other side of the world and get that done. So again, you have lots of different experiences when you go to people with the gospel. The ultimate outcome that we look for is that people will not just come to faith, but they'll come to the obedience of faith. Okay, we don't want people just to believe, we want people to put their belief into practice. They'll respond positively. And so we're hopeful that when we're studying with someone and they learn what the church is, they learn what they need to do, they learn about Christ, and then they'll be willing to obey Christ and follow the steps of salvation. Now in New Zealand, this is no easy task. We have a variety of challenges that are in our way, one of which is religious disinterest. New Zealand is becoming an increasingly secular nation, and so as you can see on the screen here, 55% of the population either has no spiritual interest whatsoever, or if they do, they're not interested in being part of a religious institution. And so that's over half of our population. 33% have some kind of religious interest and affiliation. Of course, this is dealing with, Christianity is loosely used here, and so that's dealing with all the denominational Christians, Catholics, Baptists, you name it, are in that group there as well. Just by way of comparison, this is about 6 years ago, it was only 42% of the population had no spiritual interest or religious affiliation. And so in a very short amount of time, you can see that the figures have grown. In fact, back in the 60s or it might have been 70s, the religious affiliation number was sort of in the 70%. And so you can see how far it has dropped in a relatively short amount of time. Not only is there a general religious disinterest in New Zealand, we have a lot of moral and social challenges. And so the New Zealand government in recent years has made some laws that are very, very ungodly laws. And so as you'll see there, homosexuality has been legalized, prostitution has been now made into a legitimate occupation choice for ladies to enter into. They've lowered the age of consent for physical intimacy down to 16, the drinking age to 18. They put something called a civil union, is where couples who choose to just simply live together without being married can have the same rights and privileges as those who are married. Marriage has been redefined from what God defined it as, and so now you can be married to the same gender and that is considered marriage. And I'm sure that as the years go on, that'll be further redefined. Parental authority and autonomy is being eroded. Now, they brought in an anti-smacking law that parents who want to utilize a reasonable form of discipline are now considered lawbreakers if they choose to give their kids a bit of a pop on the backside. Now, girls of any age can go to a medical clinic and get contraceptives and can even get an abortion without their parents' consent or even without their parents' knowledge. Some other laws that are being considered, and I say that they're only in consideration now, but I think it's practically inevitable that it'll come in eventually, legalizing assisted suicide or euthanasia, legalizing marijuana, and even further lessening the restrictions as to who can get an abortion. And so these are some other challenging statistics that we have in our country. And so at least 2 in 5 marriages end in divorce. I think that's quite a conservative number, but that's what I could find. I think it's probably more closer to maybe 2.5, maybe half, every second marriage is getting divorced. 28% of marriages were remarriages last year. Some of those may have been legitimate remarriages for biblical, that would be biblically fine. I'd say the vast majority were not. 35% of divorces were after a marriage of less than 10 years. 48% of children are born to unwed parents. 1 in 5 pregnancies are aborted. New Zealand has the second highest pregnancy rate among 15 to 19 year olds in the developed world. And we also have the highest rate of suicides in the developed countries from those between the ages of 10 to 19 year old. In fact, in the last 4 years, our overall suicide rate in New Zealand has risen. The number has increased 4 years straight. As I've pointed out in other places, you can't have laws like these in place and not expect to have these kind of statistics follow up. All right, I kind of wish our parliamentarians would look at the stats and sort of match the two together, but parliamentarians aren't necessarily known for thinking straight about these kind of things. And so due to the liberal, PC, tolerant kind of laws that have been brought in, and the general liberal kind of mindset throughout the country, you can see that it's kind of challenging when you speak up against these kind of things. There have been those in positions of importance who have been ostracized, who have lost their positions because they have spoken out against some of these things. And so people often have lost their status because of that. So this can be a challenge here. And I see some of you nodding your head that it's probably similar stats here in America. If not the same, you're probably pretty close to some of the same kind of challenges that we have. Now, I would like to think that we could live up to the attitude that Paul had, as is shown here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. That, look, our coming to you was not vain, that we came to you and we had boldness in God to speak the gospel amidst much opposition. And so I would like to think that we could have this same kind of boldness, despite the religious disinterest, despite the moral challenges, that we're still going to speak the gospel, and we need to do that. There needs to be a voice for the gospel. We need to be that light, because it's not going to be shining anywhere else. And so we need to be like what Paul prayed in Ephesians chapter 6, 17 through 20. We need to take up that sword, take up the gospel. I beseech your prayers on my behalf. I'm sure Jonathan and other workers will be beseeching your prayers to have that boldness. I tend to be quite a shy, reserved kind of person, believe it or not. I don't find speaking to people very easy. I covet your prayers to be able to be bold in conversations with people, to be able to do the kind of outreach that needs to be done, despite the challenges that are in our way. So, look, pray for us preachers, pray for evangelists, pray for workers in the gospel. Well, really, we all ought to be workers for the gospel, but, pray that the gospel will be spread effectively in Palmerston North. Despite the difficulties, we have tried to get the job done. We have tried to get the message out there. And so we've had the doors open in the last 4 years for 200 first days of the week. We've had 200 midweek Bible classes. By the way, we're a little bit unscriptural in Palmerston North. Our midweek Bible class is on Tuesday night. But, don't throw stones at us for doing that. But it works well for us. Now, the doors are open, and we welcome visitors to come along. We've had four major door-knocking campaigns in Palmerston North. 11,500 households have been given an opportunity by way of door-knocking. Now, 13,000 households have been given an opportunity through letterboxing. We've had at least 84 Bible study appointments set. Not all of them hold, not all of them follow through. But, again, it's another opportunity that people have had to look at the gospel. We've encouraged, we've had eight members of the congregation who have gone through a Make Disciples training program. I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. And we've also assisted four students to go through the Bear Valley Bible Institute of New Zealand. Despite the difficulties, we have had some successes along the way. And so this is a picture of some of the baptisms that we have had. Of course, my favourite one is this is our oldest daughter, Chloe, down the bottom here. She was baptised last year, and so the goal of any parent is to bring their children up to have the same faith as them, and that they will obey the gospel likewise. One of the funnier things about this baptism is that it was a really cold day and the water was cold, and so Chloe wore woolen socks. Well, she was being baptized. I'm not sure how effective wearing woolen socks was going to be, but it made her feel better about it. It still took us about 15 minutes for her to buck up the courage to get under the water, but we got it done in the end. And so we're really encouraged as parents that our first child has obeyed the gospel. And so baptisms and conversions are few and far between in our work, but we rejoice in these, and we are encouraged when they do come. And we try to rejoice with the angels when converts come our way, or when we're able to achieve that. These charts here just show some of the figures. Some people might call it the scoreboard, but this is just our Sunday attendance figures and our congregational figures. And so you read through those and you think, well, you know, it's kind of stayed kind of steady all the way through. One of the things that I pointed out this afternoon, which I think is important to note, in the last 5 years, 31 individuals who were originally in Palmerston North have either not coughed, they've either moved away to other places, they've either fallen away, or we've had one or two who have passed away. And so, look, if half of those 31 had sort of stayed with us, we would have had a congregation in the 70s. But one of the things that is encouraging, though, is that some of those who have moved to other places, they've gone to other congregations, they've taken what they've learned and been built up in Palmerston North, and they're now encouraging those congregations. And so, in a way, the work that's been done in Palmerston North is continuing on, just in other locations. And so the numbers may not have grown as we would have liked, but the work is certainly being done in other areas. And so, look, I wish I could tell you that we've had 100 converts and the congregations in the hundreds itself. I can't do that. And we might wonder, well, why? What's our primary task as the church? And so as we see in these passages, Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, look, Jesus didn't send me to baptize, he sent me to preach the gospel. He's not saying that baptism isn't important. He's not saying that baptism isn't a vital step in the plan of salvation. But he's saying, my task is to preach the gospel, to give people opportunities. And so when he got to Philippi, by way of example, he was teaching Lydia. And so Lydia was listening. Who was opening her heart? The Lord was. How? Through the gospel. Paul was speaking the gospel, but that was his only part, was to share the gospel. The Lord, through the gospel, was opening her heart. And, of course, she had to respond to it positively herself, right? She had to respond to the gospel. And so Paul would say in 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 8, look, I planted, Apollos watered. Who was causing the increase? God was causing the increase. And so what's our responsibility? Our responsibility is to sow the seed, is to evangelize. The rest is down to God and a willing heart. That's out of our hands. Okay, we're not going to do God's work for him in that sense, but neither are we going to force people to obey the gospel. People need to have a willingness on their own self to obey the gospel. We can't force that. And so we'll see that again, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 13, that Paul would say there that, look, when we came to you in Thessalonica, that you received from us the word, and so we sowed the seed of the message to you. You accepted it, and so they had to make the personal choice to accept the gospel. That was out of Paul's hands, and it was the word of God that performs its work in you who believe. And so, look, our task is to give opportunities. God doesn't expect us to convert or baptize anyone. If that happens, that's a bonus. He does expect us to be evangelistic. That's every single person in this room. You are expected to be evangelistic if you are a Christian. But don't think you have to force baptisms or force conversions. Just giving people chances is what God expects us to do. Baptisms and growth is a bonus in our work. And so I'm not going to promise you a single convert. I'm not going to promise you that our congregation is going to grow by a single person. I will promise you that we will do the work of giving people opportunities. That was the external part of the presentation. I want to briefly just touch on some of the internal things that we do in the work. Of course, sound gospel teaching and Bible teaching is a must in any congregation, no less in Palmerston North. And so we have regular Bible classes. We'll utilize good books that'll help us put together classes. We've got 4 or 5 kids classes every Sunday and every Tuesday night. Rachel is a very skilled Bible class teacher. She likes to come up with her own artwork and her own outlines and does a really good job there. We have ladies classes every second week as well. And so solid, sound teaching is a must in the work. Equipping the saints for service. Again, I've mentioned that, you know, the workers of the church is not just down to a few. If you are a Christian, you are enlisted to work. You've been given a field of exercise that you need to exercise. Each part of the body needs to work properly for the body to grow. And so we try to equip the brethren for the work of service and help them to continue on. In the top corner there, you'll see the ladies learning how to make our own Lord's Supper bread. And so each Sunday we have homemade Lord's Supper bread for our worship, and the ladies have learned how to do that. Below that is a man, Michael Whitworth, did a course, a seminar for us called Teaching Rocket, and to encourage our teachers to be excited about doing that, to learn a few tips along the way, and to do it effectively. It was a really good seminar. I can't remember where Michael is from, but I think he's somewhere local in Tennessee. It'd be well worth having him come here for the Teaching Rocket Seminar. It's just over 2 days, and he got some really, really good teaching advice. The Make Disciples program that I touched on briefly earlier is it's similar to Fishers of Men, but it's kind of been more updated and modernized by a few individuals in New Zealand. And what it does is that it teaches you how to engage in an everyday conversation and turn it into a spiritual conversation. How to start an evangelistic spiritual conversation with someone and trying to make it natural and make it effective. And so it's a really good 10-week program. One of the individuals who created it, who put it together, is now working at Fried Hardman. He's the missionary in residence at Fried Hardman. His name is John Jones, and he would love to take the course with you here. I'm sure that he could set aside some time to come and do a 10-week course here at Maryville, and you will grow and you will develop an ability to be able to speak to people on an everyday level, to make use of your everyday evangelism to reach people. But this is all part of what we try to equip the saints and give them opportunities to learn and grow and to participate in the work. We also try to make sure that we have to nurture our family nucleus in Palmerston North. And so we encourage our brethren to get together for meals and fun times and fellowship. And we'll have dress-up parties. We have an annual camp where we go and stay in tents. Some wussies will stay in the cabins, but most of us stay in tents. And we really enjoy these weekends. And just getting together, that Christianity can be fun. We build relationships. We build good networks. We marry our children off. And we have a good time just being together and having a fun time as Christians. And people need to realize that, you know, Christianity isn't boring. It's not just a bunch of straight-laced individuals, but we can get together and enjoy ourselves. We try to encourage visiting speakers to come our way on a regular basis, that they don't have to hear me all the time, but they can hear others from a fresh perspective who maybe sound a bit funny. And come along and just hear different people and be encouraged from other people's knowledge. We have quite an active youth group. We encourage our young ones to get together and, again, have some fun, but also engage in service projects. One of the things that we do annually is to have a mountain trip, and so we'll go up onto Mount Ruapehu. And the last few times we've been there, it has snowed while we've been there, which is pretty novel for us. And so it's just a good weekend where we invite other youth from other congregations to come and hang out with us during that weekend. And so we really enjoy our young ones. This is our leadership. We've got 6 of us in the leadership group at the moment. We're relatively a youthful leadership by leadership terms, but we've got, they're good men. We work well together. We've got a good spirit among us. And we really are trying to work towards, eventually, hopefully within the next 5, hopefully at least within 10 years, we'll have an eldership in place. But in the meantime, we've got these good men who are working together in our leadership. One of the things that I've really tried to promote is that I'm not the teacher, I'm not the man doing everything. All of these guys can teach classes. They can do sermons. They'll come out and door knocking. And so it's, I'm not the leader. I'm just one of the leaders. We work together. And so when I'm gone for 3 months, the congregation's in good hands. They've got good teachers who are able to carry on the work. And the brethren are seeing them out front leading and doing the work and doing kind of similar stuff to what I'm doing. And so these are our leaders. And this is the congregation. And the Palmerston North congregation sends its greetings to you. We make them aware that congregations like the one here at Merivale plays a part in our work. And so they are very thankful that your help in our work enables us to be able to do it effectively. And so they're very thankful for the part that you play in our labours in Palmerston North. And you may not be able to be there in a physical presence, but we know that you're praying for us, we know that you read our reports, we know that you are interested in what we're doing, and we're thankful for the financial help. Hopefully some of you can come over and help us in a campaign or two. That would be great. But the congregation is well aware that you play a part in our work, and we are very, very thankful for it. And just on behalf of my family, thanks for the opportunity to be here today. Thanks for letting us stay in the house for a few days. We really appreciate your kindness towards us while we're here. And look, if there's any questions that you have, please feel free to ask. If you didn't understand a single word that I said, there should be a presentation board outside in the foyer that you'll be able to read most of what I've said tonight and see some of the sheets that are on the board. But look, if you want to receive a written report every few months or so, give me your name, give me your email, I'll add you to my newsletter list and put you on that. Thank you so much for your attention. By the way, well, let me close out with this. You know, we talk about obedience to the gospel as part of what we want to be focused on. And look, we go out into the community and share the gospel and try to bring people to the obedience of faith. You in this room here today, if you're not a Christian, you have the opportunity to be able to hear the gospel. I'm sure there are many fine folk in this room who would be more than willing to open up a Bible and show you the gospel, show you what you need to do to be saved, to have the confidence that when you go to bed tonight that you can wake up in the morning and, okay, I can get through this life. Or if you don't wake up in the morning, you have a life set up for you in heaven. If you are here tonight and you already are a Christian, and maybe you've been struggling in various ways, maybe you haven't been living up to your own personal mission in the church, maybe you haven't been working as you ought to as a Christian, maybe there's sin in your life that you need to repent of, maybe there's public sin that you need to repent of publicly, there's no better time to do it than now. You're among family, you're among friends. We're not going to throw bricks at you. We want to encourage you, pray for you, and help you out. But we can't do it if you don't tell us. And so, look, if you want to learn the gospel, if you need the encouragement and prayers of the congregation, please let one of the leaders know. Let someone here know. Let's stand and sing the closing song.